Hello everybody and welcome to the Magical Learning Podcast for this week. Only, this week it's a little bit different. For people that don't know, this week Danette released her first ever book, The Adaptable Leader. And it's an amazing triumph and it's an amazing book. But on top of that, Danette and I have secretly been working on for the past 8 months, this companion podcast to that book. So first of all, the book's amazing and it's about how to be an adaptable leader as the world keeps changing. AI is changing. World politics are changing. Social media has influenced many things. How do you stay on top of it? Well, Danette's book is going to have those answers. But on top of that, we are giving you extra content just for free, which is a companion podcast. Now, this podcast, well, it's amazing. It's a companion podcast that over 8 weeks, Danette is going to talk to 8 different experts who work on different areas of adaptation. Now, the fun side of this podcast is that Danette is also going to bring on people who you've heard on this podcast, some friends of the show, like Kirsten Peterson, PhD, Sophie Kranz, and Mark Butler, as well as many others, but also introduces some new faces to us and talks to a lot of old friends. So you get a lot of really nice, friendly conversations around adaptation. Now, you can stay tuned on this Magical Learning feed and just listen as usual. It's going to come out every Friday, Australian Eastern Standard Time. Or if you want the episodes a few days early, I am going to encourage you to go over to the Adapt with Danette FM podcast page. Now, it's going to be available wherever you get your podcasts, and those will release a few days early. So if you're loving it and you want to hear the next one, I'd say jump over and subscribe to that as well. Now, the book itself is available both as a paperback and as an EPUB, so you can get them available now. Go to the website. That's in the description. So this summer, we're going to have 8 episodes. They're all amazing. And you're going to enjoy the summer of the Adapt with Danette FM podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. Now, as I mentioned before, there are many friends of the Magical Learning podcast on the Adapt with Danette FM podcast. And our first episode is no exception. Today, we're going to be talking to Callum McCurdy, who you will have heard on previous episodes and has an amazing journey, amazing story, and has dealt with a lot of neurodiversity in the workplace and now helps people with it throughout New Zealand and the world. So I can't think of a better person to start with. This is a bit of a longer episode, so you even get bonus up the top. So I think without further ado, enjoy your summer of the Adapt with Danette FM podcast. Enjoy our first episode. And as always, everybody, have a magical week. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Adapt with Danette FM, or Danette Fenton Menzies, either or. Danette, how are you going today?
Yeah, really good, Jez. Had a lovely day, and it's sunny here, so that's always awesome.
Great. And so this is a podcast for people that want to learn how to become more adaptable, not just in business, but I think in life in general. I think all of the episodes of this season of Adapt with Danette FM are applicable beyond just what you can do in business.
Totally true, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we should mention this is a companion podcast to The Adaptable Leader by Danette Fenton Menzies, which will be out now. So you can go check that out. We'll have the link available. Very exciting. So that's a book you can read that builds even more upon this. If you love this podcast, or if you've come here from the book, welcome. Here's some extra content for you with some amazing guests. So this podcast is going to be about you interviewing some really interesting people about different ways they've adapted. So, I mean, so Danette, I guess today we're going to be talking to Callum McCurdy. So maybe I'll just throw to you. Is there anything about this conversation or even just, I guess, an introduction to everybody? Maybe you want to introduce yourself. Sorry, I've said a lot of information. You go ahead, Danette.
Thanks, Jez. And hi and welcome, everyone. Yes, as Jez said, my name is Danette Fenton Menzies, big mouthful, so Danette FM works better. I have been curious about this space for a long time, particularly as we had, if you've read the book, an incident when one of our business partners went belly up just before Christmas and took out 90% of our revenue overnight. So I learned to adapt, as did my husband, very quickly. And as we went through COVID, that experience really helped us look after a number of our clients and people who weren't clients even, just to learn to adapt. And as I look to the future, there are so many reasons why we need to build our adaptability skills. And so people have often heard of IQ. They've sometimes heard of EQ, which is emotional intelligence or emotional quotient. The new one we talk about is AQ, which is adaptability quotient. And so really my book is around how do we build those skills. And this podcast, I thought about, and Jeremy definitely helped me with this concept, about How do we, you know, how do different people adapt during their careers, etc.? And so we've sought a diverse group of people to really share their insights on how do they build their adaptability as leaders too.
Absolutely. So I guess today, like I said, I guess also maybe another thing we should mention is I do the social media for Magical Learn, not the social media, I do the podcast for Magical Learning. Kanika does the amazing social media for Magical Learning. So I've just jumped on to help facilitate this conversation. So today we're going to be talking about a really interesting topic, and this is a really, really good conversation. And that is how understanding neurodiversity makes you a better leader to everyone. So certainly at the moment, there's a lot of talk about neurodiversity in the workspace, and it's a really important conversation. And today, Callum is someone who has ADHD, has worked through autism, and only learned about these things later in his life, which you'll find out in the conversation today. But he talks about how he adapted. So I guess, Danette, I'll throw over to you the sort of topic, and I guess even any insights you had on the conversation with Callum about this topic.
Yeah, we've had a conversation on the Magical Learning podcast with Callum, which sort of linked me to reach out to him to talk about it in terms of the book. And what I love about Callum is, you know, some of the insights he shared, which really made me think about how, you know, we're all really neurodiverse because each of us have different experiences. And there are a lot of people, I think he said, and I'll just get my quote from him correct, that about 80% of neurodivergent people in the workplace are undiagnosed. So you've got people who don't necessarily feel like they fit in. They're trying to fit in. They're trying to create ways to adapt to the workplace. And as leaders, if we can get curious about that, not to label or put them in a box, but really to ask questions about how can we create a workplace that allows them to bring their strengths to the workplace rather than them constantly fighting against rules that maybe don't work with their neurodivergency. And those rules don't necessarily, or the policies and that are in place, don't necessarily stop the person from doing great work. But what happens is they get so tied up in trying to do what everyone else is doing that stops them from doing great work. And Callum shares a great story about, in terms of his neurodivergency, and he only found out a few years ago that he had ADHD. And he said a number of people with neurodivergency, they could be neurodiverse and often are neurodiverse in a number of different ways. So someone with dyslexia, for argument's sake, which Callum definitely has, also then ended up being diagnosed with ADHD. So the thing is, we're all different as human beings. And so a great leader, if you want to help yourself and those around you get the best of each other, it's really being curious about what can I do to make the workplace work better for you so we can bring out your strengths. So I love the theme throughout this particular conversation, and also how the more we have those conversations as leaders, and a number of leaders will be neurodivergent as well, the more it makes it, you know, a conversation that we are comfortable having, and we can be more authentic. And authenticity through adaptability is a massive, massive thing, because if you're not authentic, people don't trust you. So anyway, enjoy this conversation with myself and Callum, and can't wait to see your feedback about it. Welcome, Callum McCurdy, and so grateful for you to be part of the Adapt with Danette FM podcast. And I'd love for you, for those who of our listeners who perhaps don't know you yet, and they should, shouldn't they?
No.
I'd love for you to introduce yourself. Give us a little bit of background.
Cool. Look, thanks so much for having me, and a bit of a pleasure. Always nice to catch up as well. Right, a little bit about me. What? Sheepers, where to start? I guess I've got one of those stories that I always thought wasn't necessarily remarkable. And then there's the more I talk to people, people go, oh, that's been an interesting life. It's like, yeah, it has been. So I guess the boring version is I grew up in a small town, went to school, did a whole lot of things, went to university, fell into a job in HR almost accidentally, and have been sort of in and around HR culture development, leadership development for about 22 years now. And that's been good fun. And there's a whole lot of sort of, I guess I've had fish hooks in my career through that. But what I do now is I help organizations and people who think differently to harness that different thinking. So people who experience the world a little bit differently, like people with ADHD and dyslexia and autism, they're, I guess, the big three. My sort of personal, I guess, passion is adults, professionals with ADHD and dyslexia as well. I have both. And when I had the realization, like I've always known that I've had dyslexia, but ADHD diagnosis was about 4 years ago. And it, I guess the penny dropped with that. And I thought, well, hang on, I've got all this experience around people management systems and how we expect people to follow a fairly similar trajectory through organizations. Something that never made sense to me, and all those HR processes sort of build as world-class and best practice, I never got them. I always thought I was just dumb, but it made sense as to why I didn't see those as being particularly useful to me. And I thought, well, there must be lots of other people like me, and lo and behold, there are, who just bubble below the surface. And so it's my job now to help those people see where their brilliance is and that they're not broken, and to help organizations, I guess, harness that untapped potential that's just, you know, it's been sitting there all along. So that's, in a nutshell, who I am, what I do. I'm out of little old Dunedin, New Zealand as well. So I'm right at the bottom of the South Island. So I travel a lot. I'm heading to Auckland in a couple of days' time to speak at a law conference, which I'm looking forward to, because they have a lot of neurodiverse or neurodivergent people there, and they sort of bubble below the surface. So yeah, there's me.
I'm writing a book, and obviously this podcast is also to help leaders to be more adaptable.
Yeah.
And one of the things I've loved since the podcast we had with you on Magical Learning about your story and some of your experiences is it made me realise that often leaders won't necessarily be aware of how they can support people who might have ADHD, be dyslexic or whatever. As you said, they bubble below the surface. So
yeah,
I'd love, because obviously you've had to do this over your career and your lifetime, what are some of the things that help you adapt, but also could help leaders help others to adapt better in the workplace?
Ah, wow. That's a massive question, because as you're asking that, of course, my brain is firing off in all directions and I can't note down all the things that I wanted to say, because I think there's probably five or six different angles that that's coming from. One is assuming that you've got what we call a neurotypical leader managing people who may or may not be neurodivergent. So I guess also in that is we have neurodiverse leaders as well, right? And so the experience of that, of the person and those people they're leading, can be quite different as well. I will say, though, that One of the keys with neurodiverse people is 80% of us are undiagnosed. So we have no idea what's going on. We just know we don't fit in, right? So it's really important for, I guess, leaders to get to know their people, to notice something about an individual and to talk to that, but not to necessarily label the person as the behavior. So go, oh, look, I just noticed that, you know, time management is an issue, or you get things in at the last minute, and I notice that tends to be towards the end of the day, but there's not a lot of interaction from you earlier in the day. I find that curious. Can we have a wee chat about that? What's that about? Now, the what's that about isn't about justify yourself. It's help me understand what it's like to be you. Because I think that's a leader's main role, is to create that environment for everyone to thrive. And that means getting to know people and go, well, what do you need? What can I do to help you out in that sense? But I think also what's really important to recognize in that 80% of people being undiagnosed is there's a lot of confusion, but also neurodiversity, all of neurodiversity essentially, is something that people are born with, right? So there hasn't necessarily been anything happened or change, etc. So they've spent their lives living in a world where that wasn't designed with their mind in mind, which means we have to hack everything, we mask, we fudge things, we make stuff up, we come up with our own workarounds. So we have our own ways of doing things. So we actually know really, really well what we need. But sometimes when we get asked the question for the first time, what do you need? We're stumped. Don't actually know, because we're used to coming up with solutions to our own problems ourselves. So it's really hard to let go of that and let someone in and go, actually, it'd be great if we could do this, or I could have this accommodation, etc. So I think the key for a leader of someone who is neurodivergent is to be persistent and to show that. And I think all that is just keep going with conversations, showing that you care. That's fundamentally it. And I know a lot of people, we can get into a whole lot of detail around this, but a lot of people who are neurodivergent don't just have one thing. Often we get diagnosed with one thing and we go, oh, that's it, you know, that's the answer, the solution. But there's a whole lot of, they call it comorbidity, but no one's ever died of dyslexia. But so there's coexistence of things, and that in itself creates a whole lot of unique experiences. And you only, in the workplace, you only see certain things in a work context. And so it's really easy to pigeonhole people as well. So we've got to make sure that we understand, we build that relationship and understand what's going on in people's lives. And perhaps even as leaders, be vulnerable and let our staff know what's going on for us as well, which creates that trust and connection in order to be able to really talk about the stuff that people need. I think we spend a lot of time focusing on leadership, and we don't necessarily spend that much time focusing on followership. And that's why I like I was really excited about coming on this podcast, Danette, about adapt. Like people who follow leaders also need to adapt their following style, even though it's not that transactional, it's not that linear or one way all the time. Does that answer any of your questions?
That does, and a great answer. And I'd also love then if we talk about, what if you've got a neurodivergent leader? What are some of the things as followers, as team members, that can work really well?
Mm. Well, like I said right at the start, I'm going to speak at a legal law profession conference in a couple of days' time. And what's really interesting there in particular, and it's not particular to that profession or industry, but it's definitely prevalent there, where we have someone who's neurodivergent and they move up through the ranks and maybe become a partner. And it's easy for that partnership leadership team to go, well, you know, neurodivergent people don't need help because look, X or Y has made it, right? And so they just pigeonhole people that way. But everyone's different. And often what makes someone a great leader is their difference, right? That's not to say that those people haven't struggled. They've just found ways to hack and get their way within a particular system that may have taken immense effort, huge emotional toll, working extra hours just to get things done. But neurodiverse leaders, we can stereotype a little bit and say that people with ADHD are very creative, and so they tend to provide their teams with lots of autonomy, and they check in, etc. But they don't—they're not great on either holding people to deadlines, or maybe not great at giving the clearest instructions, right? And so they need to work on their stuff. I guess the key is to know yourself as a leader, especially a neurodivergent leader. And I think there comes there's a transition zone or point in people's careers. You know how often it's the good technical person that gets promoted because there's nowhere else for them to go, and you lose a great technical person, you gain a rubbish manager. What I find with neurodiverse people moving through the ranks and moving into management and leadership roles is, and I'm guilty of this myself, and I use that term guilty lightly, but I think there's still truth in it, that we go, right, we're in a leadership role now. I need people to operate in ways that I would never operate in. And so we forget what it was like to be led by someone who we didn't quite get. And it's almost, I don't think leadership and parenting are the same sort of thing, but I think in this instance, what I'm trying to talk about is quite similar. I know my kids, both of whom are neurodiverse, I know growing up and not knowing what was going on for me, especially around my ADHD, as a younger parent, I think I was harsher on my kids around the things that I thought might identify my weaknesses. If I've got a hang up, I don't want my kids to have that. And so I think maybe subconsciously, but definitely at times consciously, talking to them about doing things that weren't showing them in this light. I was actually talking about myself then, just sort of looking back there. And I think that's what a lot of leaders do as well, is place them their own expectations onto their staff. And we've got to be really careful that we build that relationship. Everyone's different, right? And people are recognizing now that I think leadership traits or development methodologies or strategies for people who are neurodivergent now work for everybody, right? So it's not about giving people a leg up. And especially in a time when work used to be the greatest stress in people's lives, but now I think life is the greatest stress in people's work, which is really important, means it's really important for us to build that relationship. So I guess going full circle, I don't think it matters if you're neurodiverse as a leader or a follower and vice versa. The key, if you reach a leadership role, is to get to know yourself first, show yourself to the people you're leading as a way of setting them up to be able to show you who they are. That's the only way you're going to get the best out of yourself and other people.
And a number of, in fact, all of the guests I've had so far on the podcast talk about how important it is to have that authenticity mm-hmm. as a leader. So I love that you've brought that in as well.
Yeah, I mean, just talking about what's hard right now is really, it's so important. And I think we've got that hangover of decades of leaving your personality at work, at the door when you get to work. And I think a lot of people are struggling to shake that. And now, if any time is the moment for us to go, that's a waste of time. What a wasted load of energy.
So true. I heard someone call it image management, where yeah. the amount of energy and effort we have to do to pretend we're someone we're not.
Yeah.
When we could be utilizing that time, actually bringing our superpowers, our strengths out. So,
yeah.
I totally agree.
And I think that pretending to be someone we're not is often, it's not sinister, it's not insidious in any way, but it is through fear of being found out that people, you know, that imposter syndrome, sooner or later people are going to find out that I'm not as good as they think I am. But everybody's suffering from that. And also what I know from my own personal experience is, while I think I'm hiding all that, everybody sees through that. In fact, those things that I'm trying to hide, and even the way I'm trying to hide those things, are exactly the reasons or the things that people like and love me for. So we're not fooling anybody. And it's that wasted energy around that image management. And we just don't, Like, that's so taxing on people. Like, we've got enough to worry about in society these days. Totally. And also, as you and I know, we've spoken about before, nobody's watching us as much as we're watching ourselves. So yeah, it's that get real moment where we go, actually, that doesn't matter.
And you know, one of the things, and I took away many things from the podcast we did, the Magical Learning podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I loved your story about your relationship with time and timesheets, and I'd love for you to share that again, and only because it had never occurred to me, and yet it is such an important thing for that curiosity of others. If, you know, if someone's not filling in timesheets, there could be way more reasons than people make up. So yeah, sure.
Okay, I don't know what about that we tale you want to hear, but essentially, so with my ADHD, I have time blindness. So what that is I have a very poor ability to judge not just the length of time, but how long it will take for me to do things. So for example, 2 minutes from now and 2 years from now have the same sort of gravity. There's no difference in the sense or the feeling that gives me. I know that they're different, but in terms of an experience, I can't feel like they're going to be any different. And so I've been tripped up in the past by thinking I might have 10 minutes until I have a coaching call. I look outside, I see the lawns need a bit of a trim. And so I jump outside thinking I can get the lawns done in, you know, 8 or 9 minutes in order to get back here in front of the camera and the microphone. And then half an hour later, I'm happily making nice patterns in the lawn. And I'm thinking, I need to be somewhere. I know I've got to be somewhere, right? And that's because I just get lost in tasks, right? But also, I used to work for one of the big four consulting companies, and we would have to account for every 6 minutes, do that at the end of each week. And I can't remember what I did. I'd look back through my calendar and go, oh, yeah, I must have done those things, because I have very little working memory. So bugger all short-term memory, essentially. And so I'll look through my calendar and I'll go, I can't even remember doing that 2 days ago. But I have to allocate some time, or the time I've been working, to particular clients and to be productive and meet targets, etc. And people listening to this will go, well, why don't you just do that as you go? That would be a great strategy, but I just forget. And even post-it notes, like leaving a note for me, if that note stays in the same place, it effectively disappears after a day or so. And so I just don't recall those sorts of things. And so when it came to filling in my timesheets, I would go and hide in the bathroom. And people would, you know, be wondering where I was. And someone who reported to me eventually would end up doing my timesheet all the time. Now, one of the other difficulties I have is sequential dyslexia. So that the system we use required drop-down boxes. And when things appear and disappear off a screen for me, I get lost in those systems. So not only does my time blindness ruin me at the start of that process, but actually doing the performing the task doesn't work for me at all, which means I feel like an absolute failure, because there's all these other people who I think are, you know, my peers, my equals. Some people I think maybe I'm even a wee bit cleverer than them, but I can't even do something like use, you know, drop down menus on an intranet or a system there. And that just reinforces the not good enough. So I go into hiding for those sort of things, hide in the bathroom, or I avoid those tasks. And that puts extra pressure on my colleagues. But also the more I get away with that as well, reinforces, well, I can just go through this habit, this behavior of letting people down. And so it becomes this catch-22. And we can quite easily say, you know, we can give that another label around poor performance, but it's a downward spiral for me and for many people like me, especially when you've got upwards of 10, 15, maybe even 20% of people who are neurodivergent. Now, not everybody has my struggles, right? But they'll have different struggles. And we have in the past, I think, labelled, say, people who are autistic, we've labelled them as challengers, as troublemakers, people who question too much, or they speak their mind without thinking or considering how it's going to be received. And so we focus on that negative as opposed to going, actually, if we just tilted our perspective a little bit, we could harness this person to find the bugs and things, ask the questions in a project meeting, the things that nobody wants to ask, or the things that nobody's thought of, these sorts of things. And so I think where we focus on a deficit, if we just flip our attention a little bit, we can go, there's a whole lot of things we could harness here, because everybody, neurodiverse, neurotypical, everybody's got this, got these underlying talents that I don't think at work are being utilized because people simply don't feel safe to share the things that they think maybe don't matter because for example, I always thought the administrators in teams were amazing because they could use drop down menus, you know, and they're the sort of things that kids can do, but I just can't. So that's what I hold up as valuable. And so I guess we've also got to, in light of that story, we've got to be really careful to make sure we are forming jobs and roles that actually play to people's strengths. My doing the timesheet should have been 10 minutes at the end of a week. Yet if I was to do it, it would take me about 2 hours. I would spend all week fretting about that. And so that's actually, I'm self-sabotaging my own work potential because I'm focusing on something that actually is not what I'm there to do. Like, I was not paid to fill out a timesheet. Yet that was the biggest pressure on me. No trouble going out, meeting clients, selling work, delivering work, presenting stuff to them, using a little computer system. Was the bane of my life, and it held me up. And so I think if that answers your question, Danette, it's about getting to know people's strengths and putting people to task on the things that actually utilize those strengths, rather than these catch-all jobs that mean you start and you finish a job. Don't ask me to do that.
So the next one is, how do you deal with failure? So part of being adaptable is obviously we're not always going to get it right. So what do you do?
What do I do? This is a really interesting, like, this is a fundamental and a really basic question. Like, how do you deal with failure? And I could never think of times when I've failed. Like, I just, this times when I haven't achieved things, but I don't feel like a failure. Like, I don't get down on those sorts of things. And I think maybe that's because my day, my week, my life is just a series of micro failures all the time. Like, I'm just constantly mucking things up. But I just have this ability to laugh at things and go, well, I'm still alive. No one died. I think I get more upset by the little things, and being wired the way I am, I need, a lot of people think I'm really laid back. They don't know the chaos that's going on in my head. And I rely on structure and routine, but that's not necessarily a schedule as well. Like, I'm not particularly scheduled in things, but I do require to repeat habits. So for example, if I don't shower, have breakfast, get dressed the same way each day, my day's thrown. And that just gives me a wee sense of security. So if I get to the point where I'm making breakfast and there's something missing, like, that weighs on me and I see that as a failure. Then if I move into work mode and I find that I don't hit the mark on something, that's no big deal. Yet, you know, not having yogurt on my breakfast is like, that's ruined my day. So I think that it's, is that anti-perspective? Like, you go, get a grip, yogurt, you know, you get through your breakfast. But it's, I don't know, that's one way. I think also we set really high expectations for what delivery, what performance is. And often that those expectations are somebody else's. So, and we're trying to fit into someone else's mold or someone else's set of expectations, that sort of thing. And if we can take that away or break down expectations to then be our own, I don't think failure is necessarily an option. It might be missing the mark, but it's not all out failure. I don't really like that quote where people say, you know, there's no such thing as failure, there's only learning. Yes, that's true, but there are some things, you know, you fail, you drop the ball on things. But I think the key is to get back up and have another crack, and to realize or recognize when the way you're trying to do something is never going to work. And that's the reality check. And I think that's really important for a lot of people who are neurodivergent, is that we will probably stick to a routine and hammer it to death until finally it gets in, gives in, and we get our way. And that's not particularly clever. But dealing with failure, obviously, is... I'm just thinking about the answer to this question again. Dealing with failure is very contextual as well, because what you and I consider failures might be a wee bit different, could be quite different. So figuring out, well, what does failure actually mean to me? I'm one of those people who, when people are, like, if we're working in a group, when people are scared to fail, I'll be the first to give something a crack. Like, I'll lead the way, almost in a way. And I actually like when things don't go well. So that then gives people permission. So I can become the butt of the joke. It gives people permission to give things a go. And I don't actually mind. Like, I'm used to getting things wrong. I'm used to putting my foot in it. I'm used to, and so I think almost I start off that way, and I may even rig things so that I don't succeed. I can't think of an example, but that feels really true to me. Because I don't mind, what I look like. I take satisfaction and pride in giving something a go in order for other people to feel safe, give things a go. I don't know if that answers your question around how do I deal with failure. I think I avoided it by saying I don't recall the time I have ever failed.
So what I love about your answer is the fact that, you know what, give it a go. For others, and make it safe for them to fail and know that it's okay, because it is what it is. I love the quote. I used to say this to my staff as well. Has anyone died when they come in? Like, oh, it's like, no. Okay, that's perspective.
Okay. I remember when COVID hit, and I was sitting in my car, and I did a wee post on LinkedIn. And I said, what's the panic? Like, what is going on? You know, it turned out it was, you know, catastrophic and quite disastrous. But I think when, in particular with ADHD, like, we're always in chaos. And so our chaos level is up here and everybody else is really calm. And so we feel out of control and we mask that and hide that. But when, I guess, for want of a better term, shit hits the fan and people's level of chaos rises to us, where they're going, what's going on? And everyone's running around with, you know, like headless chickens. And that is why people with ADHD are really good first responders, who are great at triaging things, great in a crisis, great when people need some clarity. Because I know I can go, okay, we need to do this, don't do that, don't worry about that, I prioritize that thing over there. I'm great at that sort of thing. But when everything's calm, I'm useless. Like, just the biggest procrastinator and waster of time. And I often say in one of my keynotes that I'd be amazing if I came across an accident. It's just I never do. And I'd be an amazing witness to a crime as well, because I sort of spot and notice everything. Just that my life is that boring, I never even witness those sorts of things. So that's one of the benefits of ADHD in particular. It's like we can, like, I can't plan my way out of a paper bag yet. If we had to get out of that paper bag in a hurry, I know exactly how to get that done, right? Yeah.
Nice. I love that. Love that. So let's go to the next one.
Go on.
Which is about, is there a time where you, think of a situation where you adapted, but what would have happened if you hadn't adapted?
Right. Time when I've adapted. I think.
And you probably do it every day. So it might be. Imagining what would happen if you didn't adapt, where would that lead?
There's this massive example, and I don't know if it's necessarily adapting or stepping into yourself. I think often what we do is we think adapting is whole scale change, like quite big change, but often it's about stepping into ourselves. So the only thing that comes to mind, and I don't even know if this is applicable or appropriate. So I was married to my best friend, and we had a family. We've got two teenage girls now. But there was always something just bubbling away there, sort of irking me. And I knew what it was, but I never had the courage to say what it was. And so 2 years ago, I came out, so I'm gay. And that was a massive change. Like, it was a huge, that was throwing life up in the air, something that I guess I'd always been preparing for. So it's not so much about necessarily adapting then. And I think this is the key with change as well, is the change starts long before we ever notice it, right? And we think, oh, the pace of change and the scale of change and the amount of change is increasing at an exponential rate. And I don't think it is. I think change started a long time ago, regardless of what example you choose or you look into. And so when I look at my own case, like, I knew, like, that was bubbling away. There was change there. And it got to the point where it's like, I just have to, I have to be myself. Like, I have to step into who I am. Now, what that required was no change in terms of who I am fundamentally, but it required a hell of a lot of change for a whole lot of people to reconcile who they thought I was and who I now was, yet nothing had changed. So I think this comes back to your comment around brand and image management. I spent my entire life, the biggest energy suck of my day was managing what other people thought of me and how I needed to keep a check of what I said to who and whether anybody was getting a bit of a sniff as to whether I was gay. Like, that was the biggest, my biggest fear was someone finding out, right? And so I was constantly managing all that, not being fake, but just being careful. And when the day came where I said, enough's enough, I'm not going to do that anymore, I think that's the change. That's when I adapted, because I adapted to go, I actually don't have to do this. And the amount of energy I got back, the amount of time I got back, actually, the amount of positive mental energy and mental health, where I just got to go, I found myself falling back into those habits of managing who I was in front of someone, and then to just go, actually, no, and for them to see something different, but also to see in my eyes that I was at ease with myself. Like, that was a huge adaptation. So I think also we go, well, adapt or change to something new or different, but sometimes it's a matter of changing into who we really are, so the change comes in other people's eyes, and I don't have to manage that anymore. Like, that's, I've lost friends, people have walked away from me, and that's it, because I reconciled pretty early on that I'm not responsible for how the people respond to my news when they take it as their news. So yeah, I guess there's some stuff about change. I think it's just about owning who you want to be in any moment, in any particular situation, regardless of the context, go who, because I think every moment, every situation is an opportunity to take a look at ourselves and go, who do I want to be? Who's the easiest person to be? And is that the real me? And for me now, that's 100% being the real me. Thank you.
Love that. And thank you so much for sharing.
No trouble.
Yeah. I'm inspired and in awe. So thank you.
Thank you. That's interesting when you it's funny because even before I came on here today, I was going, why do you want to interview me? And and when you say that, which, you know, is very like I'll take that, I'll receive that. But it makes me feel awkward because I'm going, I'm being thanked for living my life. Like that's
and the reason I'm thinking
weird
is because you never know when you share something, the ripple effect it has.
Yeah.
And I suspect there'll be some listeners who are like, that's bubbling, but I haven't been able to share it. And, having someone role model that and, sharing that journey is super helpful. And I think, one of the things I know about really good adaptable leaders is they are authentic because then they can put the time into where they need to. So that's why I thanked you, because there would be some people who wouldn't share that because they don't feel safe enough or whatever. Yeah. No judgment. It's like I love it when people are authentic.
Yeah, 100%. So do I. And I think maybe that that's quite important. Maybe that's something that you could think about in your book as well around when, like, this is clunky, but it's something around in order to change, when do you not need to change? Like when you stop trying to change and just be. Like, I think that's adapting to a situation. You're right, there are lots of people out there, I'm sure. I see them quite often, who are not, it's not about not being authentic, they are not being comfortable as who they are, and so they try to be someone else. And I did that my entire life. So undoing those habits of a lifetime have been very, very hard. 2 years on, I still do it. And there's a sense of comfort in that sometimes as well. But there's also a sense of comfort in letting that go and going, I don't need to do that. And just the relief is amazing, Yeah.
Nice. Love that. So my next question is, what advice would you give to your 25-year-old self?
Ooh.
Yeah. Particularly around adaptability and leadership. So, and I know time is different for you, but just thinking that to a younger version of you, I'd love to hear some of the wisdom that you've learned over time.
Sure. Goodness, where do you start? So in terms of my leadership, I think, I'm one of those leaders who I trust automatically. You don't have to build trust with me. Like it's there. And I'm not necessarily one of those people who goes, well, I just automatically trust people, so it's up to them to let me down. Like, I don't expect that. Like, it's not that transactional. And I think I would give some advice to myself around reframe what you think a leader is, because I always thought it was positional, but it's actually about how you're being. And also some advice would be around, regardless of how hard anything's ever going to be in your future life, things always get better. And in fact, if anything, you always come out better off. Like I've always found, or I think I have this superpower of always just being able to land on my feet. And I have tested that, to the absolute limit a number of times in my life. And I was scared. Like as a 25-year-old, I was really scared. Like I'd left university, I'd started a job, I was getting married, we were starting a family, that sort of thing. And I had all these fears and inside me about who I was. I do not regret getting married and starting a family. Like that's, you know, if I'd come out at high school or at university, I wouldn't have this life that I have now. That's not to say that the last couple of years, and even the last couple of years, you know, in that family dynamic, weren't incredibly hard, difficult, hurtful. But things, you know, things get better. So I think trust in yourself, trust in your ability to make things get better. I think that's really, really key. They say time heals everything. I don't know about that. I did a year of, so this is the apartment that I moved to after we separated. And I did a year of sitting here going, when's it going to get better? Just waiting. And it doesn't. So you've got to be active in that. I think also I didn't understand, like I hid my dyslexia. I wrote my first book by doing that at night and on planes, hiding the really clunky, labor-intensive way I'd have to print out each page in order to try and edit it, that sort of thing. And I had all of that from my family and colleagues and that sort of thing. I would probably tell myself the sooner I own not only my, you know, my sexuality, but the sooner I own my way of experiencing the world, my get tested for ADHD, my dyslexia, my dyscalculia as well. The sooner I own those, the more I would, the quicker I would be able to have some real impact on the world. Like essentially, it's hurry up, like hurry up and own yourself. And that's my advice for other people out there as well. I've done some really hard things in terms of life change. And the fear that crippled me for decades was over in a snap. If I can just digress a little bit, I told people I was gay building up to the person who I thought would be the hardest to tell, and that was my dad. A lot of people think, yeah, that should be your wife, but no, it was my dad. That phone call we had and his response, which was not what I expected, was not what I expected for 20, 30 years, was just in an instant. So like I couldn't believe it. Like I was so annoyed with myself for going, you used him as the excuse to not come out, and he was amazing, and you didn't give him the credit that he might be amazing, and as a result you've waited and wasted. And so I reckon my biggest piece of advice to myself is figure out who you are, own it, and step into it, because I could be amazing and everybody can be amazing. 35, 25, 55, you know, we've all still got amazingness to impart on the world. God, I waffle. Cut me off.
No, you don't. I love that story. Thank you. Again, you know, and I love that because it highlights to people that, you know, rather than listening to those stories and not taking that action, mm-hmm. you're better to take the action and actually find out.
Yeah. Yep. That's right. Because I think also when you're doing something that is true and honest to yourself, if people don't like it, that's on them. Like, it's the people totally. That stepped away from me have they've done me a favor. Like I don't have to worry about what they might think of me. I don't have to worry about managing them. Like as far as I'm concerned, this is the real arrogant thing. As far as I'm concerned, it's their loss.
Totally.
Because that's effort and energy I don't need to use up. So.
Yeah, and you know. It's an opportunity to explore what are the values, beliefs, and am I being true to those values and beliefs? And
yes.
Yeah, it also clears space sometimes where you need that space too.
Yeah, and who doesn't need that space now? Like everybody's, not everybody, that's a big generalization, but lots of people are struggling, right? And we're struggling because we're pulled in multiple directions. And I think a lot of us are being pulled internally in multiple directions by our heads and our hearts. I think giving yourself permission to go, actually, what does matter? Who am I? Who do I want to be? I got to a point where I'm 46 now, halfway through my life, I reckon. I want the second half to be better. That's not to say that the first half wasn't amazing, because it was, you know, it was great, but I want it to be even better. And I'm still amazing friends with my former wife. Relationship, you know, there's hurt there, and with the kids up and down, but they're also teenagers, and they've got their own stuff going on as well. But I think we create situations, and it's what we do in the moment, and it's how we choose to be in each of those moments. And I'm not perfect, but I do try to stay true to who I am and the reason I live the life I do now. Yeah.
Nice. Oh, I'm so loving this interview. So we're getting towards the end, and I'm really curious, and we can talk for however long you want, because Jez will edit this as he does. Is there anything else you'd like to share? You know, given we're going to be talking to leaders who are either coming into the leadership space and learning how to navigate disruption, or it could be people who are already in the leadership space navigating that disruption and trying to be just a little bit more adaptable.
But yeah.
Love your insights.
Look, one of the things that I really like doing, this plays on the neurodiversity focus, I guess, that I have, is one thing I love doing with teams is helping them figure out where do they diverge as well as converge. And I think that's a really key skill for leaders to not only assess, okay, what have we got in the team? What are we trying to do? And where are our gaps? But also, who do we currently have here? And who are our outliers? Who are our who are the people that don't work like other people? And how can we harness those skills as opposed to going, how do we get this person and squeeze them to fit into this mold? That whole concept of recruiting for fit, I think, has been bastardized, essentially. It's been used by a lot of weaker managers to recruit people with minds like theirs, like thinking, how do I find people with minds like mine? And they just create sort of mini-me's, and we're not able to see a problem from all angles. We're not able to see the solutions that might be there because we're all coming about that problem from the same stance. So look at as a leader, where do you differ from your team? Who in your team? And actually, don't do the self-assessment yourself, but do it with your team and go, where don't we agree? And what's behind that? So what that results in is we come about the problem the same way. And which means we can't canvas the problem, which means we can't come up with new or alternate solutions. It also means that what our view of a good idea is all the same. And so we try to fit our ideas into that same mold. Rather than looking at, well, where do we disagree and how do we come about things a bit differently? So as a leader, I think it's really important to canvas with your team, like, what are the things that we don't agree on? And that's fine. Like, especially in New Zealand, and I think it's the same in Australia, but maybe not to the same degree, but we are the most passive aggressive nation on the planet. And so we want to fit in, and we want people to like us, and we want our idea to be, you know, the perfectly formed idea the first time people hear it, just in case they do what everybody does and judge the person based on the idea, as opposed to just judging the idea. and tearing that apart because we take ownership of those ideas. But I think if we're able to really look at, well, where do we differ as people in our experiences? And the easiest way to do that is to not necessarily talk about work examples, because that's just a bit too contentious to start with until you build enough trust, but to talk about things outside of work, like how people might do the shopping, how you write your list, how you go through the supermarket, just silly things like that, how you hang out washing. Within a team of, say, 8 people, the diversity of thought of what the best way of hanging out washing is, what end of the socks you put the pegs on, whether you use one peg for a pair of socks or per sock, are they color-coded? Is it small to large at the back or back to front or whatever? Like, people have different options. And this is, these are, you know, it seems nonsensical, but it relates to work really, really clearly, because we get to see why people operate the way they do in the workplace when we understand how they operate outside of work as well. So I think one of the key things is just to, in terms of adaptation, is to figure out, okay, well, where are we making, how do we make the best use of our uniqueness as a team? And that comes through harnessing our differences as well as our similarities.
And I really love the clothesline idea, because mine is definitely chaotic and not in any order.
Same.
Which I love.
Yeah. Totally. Still gets dry, right?
It does, exactly. Yeah. So thank you so much, Callum, for joining me on this podcast. Super appreciate it. I'm sure I'm going to get you back on more, as I know Magical Learning is planning on doing. So
I'd love to.
It's just been a brilliant conversation and, yeah, just so appreciative.
All right, and welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that amazing conversation. I know I took a lot away from it. And before we get to our question here, we're having each week, we're going to have an adaptable question to help people in specific situations to help them adapt. But I just wanted to sort of mention from that conversation, one thing that kind of sparked from my mind is, I remember a long time ago, I was watching a documentary and it said, just based on that, the theme of everybody can become a more adaptable leader once you better understand everybody and, you know, what strengths and limitations they have. A great example for me is one time I watched a documentary about doorknobs, and they were saying that with round doorknobs, it works if you have a hand and you've got a free hand, but having it as a little pulley thing can help people that A, don't have hands, or B, That then gives you the option for people that are carrying things to also still open the door. So sometimes making things more accessible can actually make things more accessible for everybody in more specific situations. So Danette, how did you find the conversation with Callum?
Oh, I always love the conversations with Callum. He has such great examples of, you know, what his experience was, and it really reminds me a lot of my experiences and thinking, maybe I've got a little bit of neurodiversity in me as well. And actually just going, that's actually helps me explain some of the stuff that goes on for me. So yeah, I actually love his conversations.
Each week we're going to have a little adaptable question at the end, sent in by listeners. So let's start here. This week we have a question from Keith. And Keith's question was, I have just started scaling up my business and wanted to know what's the best way to get the best out of diverse talent. Sorry, I'm quite new to this and leadership and hiring, and it's not something I've done before. So I guess this is just sort of extending off of a little bit what Callum was talking about, I guess, in a bit more of a broad way. So Danette, what's your answer for Keith there?
I love Keith's question. And so the first thing I'd say is, we need to know ourselves. So part of building your adaptability skills is actually to learn about your purpose, your values, and become aware of how you work, what works for you, what doesn't work, because it's really hard to lead others until you can tell them what works for you. And then it's really about getting curious about your people. How can you empower them to be better at what they do? So what constraints have we put in place that maybe don't work for them? And maybe we can either adapt them or remove them in order to enable people to bring more of their strengths, their superpowers to the workplace. And one of the parts of the podcast that I loved about having this type of conversation is Callum talks about the washing line exercise. Now, if you've listened to this, you've obviously heard that, but it's about how people hang out clothes on the washing line. And we're all different. And that is less confronting often in a team than going, well, what do you do different at work to me? Start with, well, how do you hang out your washing and go from there? So, you know, Keith, you're always going to be learning. And I think the asking questions of your people, and if you get triggered, reflect on that for yourself and then go, okay, how can I make this something that, you know, doesn't make people fearful of asking me questions and stuff? And so being really open and vulnerable with your team as you learn, because when we're open and vulnerable, people are more likely to trust us and also more likely to support us if we don't get it right.
Amazing. Well, Keith, I hope you enjoyed that answer, and thank you for writing in. Danette, do you have any other final thoughts on today's conversation before we wrap everything up?
So my big thing and big takeaway from what Callum says is our brain is quite lazy. So it tends to label people who are different to us and put them in a box, and we lose our curiosity. The problem is the moment we're labeled, our shutters tend to go up and we tend not to bring our best selves to work. So all of us need to stay curious and ask questions and share also our struggles so we create a safe workplace where everyone can bring their best selves to work.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Danette, for this episode. And for everybody, stay tuned because we have some amazing other podcasts. If you're listening to this years in the future, go through the whole catalog. There's so many good conversations. Each one's incredibly unique. Danette, I want to thank you so much for being on the Adapt podcast and running it. To everybody listening, have a magical week.
Thanks, cheers.